Welcome to Minnesota Circle. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Nicole.
Minnesota is filled with incredible gems, from the beautiful north shores of Lake Superior to the locally owned coffee shops where they greet you by name.
Join us each week as we highlight all the amazing things Minnesota has to offer. We interview local entrepreneurs and inspiring individuals, share hidden travel gems, events, and more.
We believe in the power of personal narratives and have a passion for making our communities feel more connected. At the end of each episode, we will also feature a song from a local musician.
All you need to know for Minnesotans on the go.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Minnesota Circle. Thank you, as always, for listening. We have another very fascinating episode today with Jake Pettit from Pettit Pastures. And before we get into the episode details, we have a few things going on in Minnesota Circle land. So we have, first of all, a staycation scavenger hunt with 30 different places to explore around Minnesota. You can find the link to that on our website or on our social media. And for each spot that you find and take a photo of while you're there and tag us online, you'll be entered into a drawing for a $100 gift package filled with local items. So go and check that out, especially if you're staying local and you're just looking for some things to do. It is really fun, and there are some harder ones, some easier ones, and they're for all ages, and you'll really enjoy it. And then as far as our give back campaign, currently we are running a fundraiser in partnership with Everybody Love Everybody. It is a husband and wife duo that are doing incredible things for homeless adults in Minneapolis, and we are partnering with them until the end of April to raise funds for them. So there's kind of a few different ways you can get involved. You can either shop through some of our partners that are donating a portion of sales. You can donate directly to us or to Everybody Love Everybody. You can provide items. There are various drop-off sites all over the Twin Cities. You can volunteer. You can have your kiddos draw some pictures of encouragement. There's really just a wide array of ways to participate and support our neighbors. So more info about that is also on our website. And as far as the featured musician for today, we have Alina Mara with her song On the Table at the end of this episode after the interview. So she is a 24-year-old singer-songwriter based in Minneapolis. She began songwriting over a decade ago, a maturity reflected in her music. Her debut song On the Table deals with themes of heartbreak, change, and personal growth, mixing indie folk songwriting sensibilities with modern production to create catchy yet reflective melodies bound to echo in both mind and heart. So stay tuned to her song On the Table at the end of this episode. As for our guest, Jake Pettit, is running, co-running a farm with his family up in Malacca, and he is doing things a little bit differently in his farm. So I'm going to have him share more about that, and so stay tuned for Jake.
Hello, everyone. We are back with another episode of Minnesota Circle, and we have Jake Pettit here today from Pettit Pastures Farm, and we are really excited to be speaking with him all about how he does things differently at his farm with his cows. And it's been a family-run farm for quite a while, and so let's just kind of start from the beginning, Jake, and introduce yourself and share some history of your farm, how it began.
Sure. So yeah, like you said, my name's Jake Pettit. My father and I mainly run Pettit Pastures, which is a farm that we produce grass-fed beef as well as Berkshire pastured pork in the summer months. We started in 2012, the farm. My dad had been a dairy farmer growing up and a dairy farmer into the 80s, and then got out of it to get into a different career. And when he was looking to retire, he wanted to get back into farming and had talked to me about it. And I had been reading quite a bit about grass-fed beef at that time. And so we decided to start up a grass-fed beef farm. And it's been very interesting seeing him kind of buy into all the regenerative agriculture practices that you use with grass-fed beef compared to the conventional farming methods that he kind of grew up with and farmed with as an adult as well. So we have a we're very focused on soil health and water quality. And that's kind of how we run the farm. Obviously the cattle eat grass, the soils produce that, and the more life in your soil, the healthier your soils are, the more nutritious your forage is and the more nutritious the beef is that we produce, as well as being a way to heal the land from all the abusive agricultural practices that have been done for, you know, almost 100 years now in the United States. So
yeah, and I have a lot of questions. So when you started the farm in 2012, it's because I'm completely naive to the process. How did you pick where you're going to be farming? How do you pick what cattle you're going to be using? Because that varies so much. And how do you know how much acreage you need for the farm?
Sure. So when we bought our farm, it was partly on what was available and the type of land setup that we were looking for. So we're located near Malacca, which is actually a really nice area for what we do, because it's not the huge crop fields. It's broken up by some lowlands and stuff, which give us an opportunity to pick up more grazing land around us. The type of cattle we use, so they're a genetic Angus, and we have them crossed with a low-line Angus. And so low-line Angus are the same genetically as a regular Angus, except they're smaller. They're not miniatures like miniature Herefords or anything. They're just a smaller breed. And that smaller framed cattle finish better on grass. And so that's kind of the reason that we went with that breed. And it's worked out really well for us over the years. As far as acreage goes, it all depends on the health of your grass. Like the average statistic for Minnesota, they say, is 2 acres per cow-calf pair for the year. And of course, with that, they're not, you know, they're taken in. You're probably grazing them from the middle of May until maybe beginning to middle of September. We try to graze our cattle as long as possible so that we feed less hay, and even when we're feeding hay, we keep them out on pasture, but keeping them out grazing, doing what they naturally do is what we shoot for. So like this year, we started grazing the middle of May, or last year, I should say, we started grazing the middle of May, and we did not start feeding hay until December 15th. So, you know, it takes a lot of planning and keeping your pastures up and stuff to be able to graze that long, but that's kind of the goal that we shoot for.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think that'll help kind of provide some insight for others too. My husband, he was raised in a farming family for Hartford in Mexico. And so he knows a little bit more of that behind the scenes of farming side of things. So I'm always curious on how it works. So I know what's was very important to your farm is doing things differently, making sure your cattle are fed appropriately, making sure they are as healthy and as happy, and we have good quality beef. So let's dive into that a little bit more and share what things you did not want to do at your farm, and how you set it up differently, kind of the processes there for people that don't know between like conventional and grass-fed, what that looks like.
Sure. So some of the things we didn't want to do on our farm, we didn't want to use a lot of the chemicals and antibiotics that are used. So we don't use any antibiotics. We don't use any hormones with our cattle. And we don't use any herbicides, pesticides, insecticides, all of those. I mean, not the antibiotics or the hormones, but all of those sides kill, right? And so you might be trying to, like, say with an insecticide, you're trying to kill lice or something like that. Well, it doesn't only kill those. It kills every other insect as well. Same with a herbicide. You can't just target like one little plant that you want to get rid of. It's going to kill a whole swath of them, unless they're genetically modified. And so that's really what we wanted to get away from. And the way we do it is we found that mimicking nature as best as possible is the way to do it. And it almost in every case works out the best. It may take a little bit more planning and a little bit more work, especially if you're switching from a conventional to regenerative egg like we're doing at the outset, but usually nature has it figured out. And so, you know, I'm sure most people have heard about how great the soils were on the prairies when the country was settled. And that soil was built by the native prairie grasses and the bison herds that would move, eat the prairie, trample it down, leave their manure, and keep doing that time after time after time. In modern agriculture with cattle, they do what they call set stocking, where they just put them out on so much land and leave them out there to just keep eating all the time. The plants never really get to fully grow. And when the plants don't fully grow, their roots don't fully grow. And with short roots and then the plants being, certain plants being overeaten, lose diversity of the plants. So what we do is we rotationally graze or manage intensive grazing, some people call it. And that means that our cattle are only in one spot for a couple days at a time. And then we move them and that spot gets to fully regrow, not just above ground, but also the roots that go down and pull up different minerals, interact with all the different life in the soil. And so we've found just by whenever an issue comes up, trying to mimic how nature does it is usually right. Nature is a lot smarter than humans, even though we like to think that we're the smartest. There's a lot of things about healthy soil that's still, even in, you know, this modern day, not understood. And if you try to apply the principles of eliminating certain things, it just doesn't tend to work in nature. If you look anywhere in a natural setting, having just one thing growing is not natural. And if you look at most farming, that's how it's done, right? Monocultures. And so diversity is what we strive for in all of our pastures. We want as many different things growing as possible. We don't really worry about weeds. If the land is healthy and the cattle are in there for a short time, trampling down grasses, eating grasses and moving on, they kind of take care of themselves. And even what we call weeds are still benefiting the soil life and the nutrient cycle, as well as the water cycle. So like when we bought our farm, the organic matter in our soil was between 1% and 3%, depending on which field you're at. And we've been able to raise those by a full percent in all those pastures over the last 10 years, which may not sound like a lot, but moving it up one full percent, you know, is like 33% on a 3% organic matter. And for each percent of organic matter that your soil has, it can hold, you know, roughly an estimated like 43,000 gallons of water more in that soil. So every time it rains, rather than running off, you know, and into the streams and flooding the rivers and the ponds and stuff, it's held in the soil. And one, that's better for water quality all around. And two, it's better for when we have dry times, like last summer was super dry. Your pastures do better if they hold more of that moisture that you get.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Knowing like the intricacies of how that works. So some things that I think people often wonder is first, when you are removing the antibiotics and hormones and things like that, how does it affect the health of the cattle? Because I imagine there's a purpose why people are using those things. And so I'm curious how do you prevent like disease in your cattle without using those methods? And then cost-wise and sustainability-wise, how that looks. If it's something that's able to be massively, like if all farms are able to be changed to the organic, like grass-fed style, or do we need more space for grass-fed, or like just how would that look if that sustainability-wise?
Sure. So when you switch from not using antibiotics or things like that, for one, you need to make sure you have a really good mineral program going on and make sure the cattle have the right minerals and nutrients that they need. A lot of the problems that the antibiotics are fixing are because animals are being raised in confinement. And when you keep a whole bunch of animals, or, you know, even if people for that matter, in a small area, bacteria builds up, diseases build up, especially with animals. Cattle have a lot of manure, and when they're congregated in an area, that manure congregates and they're standing in it and they're laying in it. When we keep our animals out on pasture 365 days a year, been doing this for 10 years now. There's never been a time where we've had to bring them in. We've had to move them, you know, from pasture to pasture with floods and things like that, but we've never had to bring them in. Animals were made to be outside, right? They don't wear clothes like we wear. And so keeping them out, you have to give them shelter with tree lines or windbreaks or things like that, but keeping them out and keeping them moving. So for instance, even when we're feeding hay and haylage during the winter, every time we feed a new bale, we move it. So we keep the cattle moving across the pastures, spreading their manure evenly across the pastures rather than congregating and having it built up. That helps the health of the animal, one. It helps spread that manure out and get all the nutrients into the soil. I was just listening to a research paper that just came out from Canada where they had looked at the soil benefits of feeding cattle out on pasture or feeding cattle in a lot and then hauling that manure out. And the benefits of feeding them on the pasture were over double what it was hauling them out. You just lose things without having the cattle out there on the pasture. And so that's the biggest thing. And I remember my dad even saying, when he was dairying and they'd be having problems or whatever, and the vet would come over and the vet would always tell him, getting them out on pasture will help. Getting them out on pasture will help. And that's kind of what we see. We don't deal with a lot of sickness. The vet is very, very rarely ever to our farm. So when you mimic nature, it seems to work. I'm not saying that it's easy, but it definitely does. And then as far as your question on could this be done across the nation on a scale, there's a lot of different research papers out there on that. And most of them say that, yeah, it can be done, because even when cattle are in a feedlot, people are planting grains typically for them and then bringing that to them. So if you took all those acres of corn and wheat and rye that they're harvesting and then bringing in and feeding to the cattle, and you put those cattle out on pasture, it would be able to handle it. The estimates of when North America was settled, that there was somewhere between 30 and 100 million buffalo in the country. And right now the cattle herd's at around 30 million in the United States. So, I mean, we're nowhere near that. Obviously there's not the habitat that there was when the buffalo were here, but I believe that everybody could do it if the consumer demanded it.
And how does that come across cost-wise for the consumer? I mean, imagine there's increased costs for having a larger space for them to roam for the farm, things like that. But how would the consumer notice the difference? Also, kind of what things should they be looking for when they're purchasing beef? How do they know that it's something that aligns with what they're looking for?
Sure. So grass-fed is more expensive if you're buying an individual cut than conventional beef, and for a few different reasons. One, the land size, like you said. Number two, grass-fed cattle are going to be older than conventionally raised cattle because it takes longer to finish on an all-forage diet than it does on corn. And cattle, they have four stomachs. They're ruminants. They were made to digest, cellulose, grass. They were not made to digest corn. Feeding them corn, feeding them grain diet creates all kinds of different health problems for them. That's one of the reasons that they harvest them so much earlier as well. One of the biggest cost increases for the grass-fed producer is typically because we're smaller producers. We're not going to these huge, gigantic slaughterhouses. We're using local butchers. Our processing cost is a lot higher, like 10, 15 times higher than it is for the big operations. Now, that could be changed. But one benefit of that is, like, we use McDonald's meats up in Clear Lake for our processing. And everybody that works there lives in town there. They pay a good wage to their employees. It's not a factory setting. I mean, they're good jobs for the people that are doing that work. And so if you've ever been to a large scale like slaughterhouse, those are not good quality jobs. So the cost is higher there, but there's some benefits that go along with that as well. And if you're looking to buy grass-fed beef, the first thing I would say is if you can know the farmer, that's going to be your best bet overall for sure. About 85% of the grass-fed beef sold in the United States is foreign beef. It's shipped in here. And so in the United States, if the final cut of the meat, so if they ship like a quarter over here, then they cut it into steaks, they can label it product to the U.S. So just because you see a package of beef at the grocery store that says product to the U.S., that does not mean it was born and raised in the United States. Most of it was not. So the first thing I would say is ask, you know, try, if you can, there's a lot of people doing what we're doing now, and there's a ton of good producers out there. So if you can find a local producer, that's always going to be your best bet. Another good certification to look for is the American Grass-Fed Association. We're certified by them. They send out independent inspectors to the farm yearly to make sure that we're following all their standards, which includes no grain at any time, no sugar or starch supplements. So, and all of your animals have to be born and raised and processed in the United States. So, you know, if you're going to buy from a normal grocery store, if you see that American grass-fed label on there, you can know at least what you're getting there for sure.
Yeah, that's something that I feel pretty strongly about as well. It's like, I mean, people have different preferences around what type of food they're going to eat, what they can afford. But if you can support your local farms and produce and your meat and all these different things, I mean, there's just so many advantages, whether it be just helping your local economy to, you know, you're not paying for somebody to ship it across, and that's increasing the wear and tear on the earth and things like that. So like, that's just really an easiest way to make sure you're getting the best quality and the freshest and best way you can purchase your groceries. So in that topic, what type of beef do you provide? What does that look like? How do you sell? Do you have like CSAs? Where can people purchase your products? Things like that.
So we supply a few restaurants. Probably our biggest one in St. Paul is French Meadow Bakery and Cafe. We supply them with beef. So if you're at a restaurant, they're a good one. Out in Buffalo, we do Gather Kitchen. Most of our sales come on through our online website, which is petitpastures.com. And we sell individual cuts as well as smaller packages and quarters, halves, and wholes if people are interested in buying it that way. The individual cuts is going to be your most expensive way to buy. And then, like, you know, quarter, halves, and wholes are your cheapest. And actually, if you're buying quarter, halves, and wholes, it's cheaper to buy it that way than it is to buy individual cuts of conventional beef from the grocery store. So there is ways to make it economical for everyone. We deliver to the Twin Cities in central Minnesota. And if you have a $100 order, we don't charge any delivery fee for that as well.
Yeah, and I know some people sometimes go in on like a beef package together, like they'll get, you know, a quarter or a half or something and then split it up that way. It's a really good way to, if you don't have space in your freezer, or, yeah. You know, you can't afford the whole thing yourself. So how early of a notice do you need to place an order? Do you come in like weekly? Just how fast can you get the items?
Yeah, so if you order an individual cut that's in stock, we'll have it to you typically within a week, sometimes, you know, 2 weeks at the most. It kind of depends on the schedule and what's going on as far as deliveries. When you place an order, we send you an email to try to set up a delivery date with you, and then we'll deliver it right to you there. As far as like the quarters, halves, and wholes, we take deposits on those, and it depends. Like during COVID, you know, we were booked out almost a full year. Right now, I think we're taking deposits right now for our late April processing date. May. We just sold out our April one, so we're taking for our May processing date. We process every month, actually every 3 weeks, but at least once a month. And all that information's on the website. When you look, you can see how far out we're taking reservations for.
Okay. And how many cattle do you have at one time?
Sure. So we have somewhere, it depends, right? Because they're being born and they're being processed. So we always have somewhere between 150 and 200 head of cattle on the farm. And we're finishing off about 80 head a year.
Okay. And do you live then full time on the farm, like you with your father, or who mans the farm during the day?
Sure. So that my dad mans the farm during the day for the most part. And I live off farm, and then I'm on the farm nights and weekends to help. And I do 90% of the deliveries. So if you order from us and you get a delivery, it'll probably be me bringing it to you. My mom does help once in a while, but typically it's me.
Okay. What does a typical day look like for your dad, on the farm? What kind of care and things go into like a daily life on a grass-fed beef farm? And also, do you have visitors at your farm?
Sure. So I'll answer the second question first. Yeah, we have visitors on the farm. We always welcome anybody who's interested to come out. Just, you know, send us an email, contact us, you know, through phone or the website or email, whatever, and set up a time to come out to make sure that we're around and have the time to show you around. And we do that quite often with people. And then as far as like a day, so during the summer when the cattle are grazing, we'll typically have 2 to 3 different herds. And so you're out checking each herd, moving each herd typically. The cattle that we're finishing, we'll be moving those up to 4 times a day. And with those, we're a lot of times what they call strip grazing. So you're grazing them across a field with just one, they call it a poly wire in front of them and step in posts. So it's moving those posts, picking them up, setting up the next strip for them to graze. It's checking fence, making sure the fences are they're hot, and you know if you need to fix them, if you need to cut weeds around the fences. But you know that's it. I mean it's work, but it's a fun lifestyle.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's completely different when you are having them grass-fed because they're more self-sufficient than just roaming around and eating the grass. So I'm curious to know what you envision the future of farming to look like. It's such a controversial topic, I feel, and people have very strong opinions either way. And I would like to know just kind of your thoughts on that. I know there has been some talk of vertical farming and going that route. Other people are talking about going more to back to the basics and natural. Others are talking completely different. I'm just kind of curious on what you envision that future to be like. If people are eating less meat or more meat, just kind of curious your thoughts on that as somebody who works in the industry.
Yeah. So I kind of see both sides of it. On the one hand, I see regenerative agriculture growing. I mean, especially since when we started. But on the other side, I see the engineered meat and the vertical farms that you mentioned, and those kind of things. You know, and I said like the way we like to raise our cattle is to kind of follow nature's pattern, because every time you try to break it, nature shows you that it knows more than you do. And you create an unintentional consequence. And it's my personal belief that that's the same route we're going down with the vertical farming and the engineered meats. If you look at the ingredients in an engineered meat, it's not healthy stuff for you. And the vertical farming, so much life and so many interactions are going on in the soil between insects and bacteria and worms and the roots and the mineral exchanges that I think we as humans oversimplify and look at and say, oh, plants need, nitrogen, potassium, and calcium, NPK, to grow. And we'll just give them these NPK in this chemical form and things will be fine. But that's not the case. You can look at the nutrient density of even fruits and vegetables and how it's gone down, you know, from what we had in the early 1900s to what it is now. And it's my belief that's because of soil health and the degradation of our soils. That's one of the reasons that we're so big into the soil. We believe that's the base of everything and how it starts. The plant, the anti-meat sentiment that's out there is being pushed by, you know, some big money, you know, food companies and agriculture companies that have a benefit to push that. There's a lot being said about cows and the planet, right? And how they're not good for greenhouse gases and that kind of stuff. There's been some recent studies out on grass fed regenerative agriculture and showing that by building the soils, you're actually sequestering more carbon than you're putting off in your farm. And it doesn't matter if you're growing vegetables or you're growing meat, no other agriculture is able to say that or do that. And I truly believe that getting animals back on the land, improving the soil, is the key to restoring not only the land and the water cycle, but you know, the warming issue that we have going on as well. So I kind of look at the fake meat and I think back to like in the 80s, they said, don't eat butter, eat margarine because it's better for you. This is what you should eat. And here we are in the 2000s, they're saying, no, margarine is actually bad for you. Butter's good for you. We should have been eating this all the time. And I kind of look at that like butter was, you know, butter's just milk that's been, the cream's been taken off. It's close to a natural product, right? There's some processing in there, but there's not a lot of additives. Margarine's full of additives. And that's kind of, I'm not a scientist, but that's kind of how I look at the meat debate.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because I know that people have all different opinions, and it's good to hear from the people that are actually working on the farms, and you know, versus somebody.
Yeah, we would say it to people too. If you know, if you have a concern about that, come out to the farm, and we'll show you around. Our farm is a healthy ecosystem. Like this winter, we've seen, well, last fall before hibernation on our farm, which is just up in Mille Lacs. It's a little ways out of the cities, but not very far. We've seen bear, coyotes, fox, bobcat. You know, those are all predator species at the top of the food chain. If you're seeing them around, that means you have a ton of birds. You have a ton of rabbits and rodents. And if you have a ton of rabbits and rodents and you have insects and on, you know, it just all builds on each other. Like we all learned in school about the food cycle and how nature was so cyclical. And I think it's really, really true. I think the part that was left out that we weren't all taught when we were kids was how important the soil is to all of that.
Yeah, thank you so much. And so just to recap again, can you share where people can find you, how they can order the beef? And then just one last question to finish it off. What's something that you wish you could tell the consumers listening, something that a very common misconception that you maybe hear all the time that you just kind of wish that you could respond to and share with our audience?
Sure. Yeah. So to find us, you know, you can go to our website, which is petitpastures.com. If you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at petitpastures@gmail.com. And then to answer your last question, I guess, you know, I'll go back to the myth that cows are bad for the planet, or that, you know, we shouldn't be eating meat because it's bad for the planet. Well, okay, if we all stopped eating meat, what do we think is going to happen to all these animals? Like, they're not, you know, they're only being raised because we utilize them and use them. And so is it really better for the planet and better for everyone to get rid of all these animals and no longer have them around? You know, I like, I think I hit on it pretty well already, but I truly believe that if you're using regenerative agricultural practices, you're keeping animals, you know, on pasture, rotating them, building the soils, that is, you know, what we need in our society.
Yeah, thank you so much again for speaking with me about your farm and about your processes. And if you are listening to this and have more questions about those topics that I didn't cover, definitely reach out to Jake. He's more than happy to answer any of those questions. We'll be doing some more behind the scenes of his farm as well. Or if you yourself want to go and take a look at how he's doing things differently at his farm, they definitely welcome visitors. So again, thank you, Jake. And I look forward to having some of your beef in my freezer soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Looking for more ways to learn all about the incredible things Minnesota has to offer? Follow us on social media at Minnesota Circle or subscribe to our newsletter at themncircle.com.
If you wish to have a song featured on the podcast, please contact us. Loved this episode? Then subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Join us next time and enjoy the music.
Catch a red eye. Leave another fair weather lover on the ground. There's no sense in crying, but I'm still looking down. I'm about to be in the neon city, and you're about to be the last thing on. Don't mean to sound unkind. Just trying to love you by giving you what you need. And it hurts like hell to know that it's true. And it hurts like hell. Don't know how you turned it off so fast. You remember the way you looked at me last weekend?
Last weekend.
Like you had the rest of our lives in mind. I had that same naive belief exposed in my eyes.
In my eyes.
You changed overnight into the kind of man that won't even say goodbye. You used to beg me, baby, please don't leave me. Said you might die if I ever did. But you're breathing fine, you're breathing easy on your own. I'm not sure if there's any water in that well. What's there to give when you've given it all away?
What's there to give when you've given it all away?
What's there to give when you've given it all away?
What's there to give?
What's there to give when you've given it all away? What's there to give when you've given it all away? That part of me died when I watched you walk away. I'm about to be in the neon city. You're about to be the last thing on. Wish that wasn't a lie.